what you're saying. So the cost is privacy breach. So most of the people, they would not like their data to be public available. It exposes them to all kinds of like, so if you are in a poor law enforcement countries, it's even more dangerous. So in developing countries, the financial markets are not perfect. So a lot of people, they rely on their social networks, their relatives to borrow money. Again, you would like your data to be available online to see how rich you are or how poor you are. And plus, there is effectively discrimination, which you said. But no one went to court, so this program is continuing. And problem is, so there is always some trade-off between privacy and security. And these privacy breach, they are always predicated upon the security concerns. So we live in like high security concern countries, so privacy concerns are almost non-existent. So every person in the country, we have a system of national ID cards, and every person in the country, they have national ID card, their whole fingerprints are with the government. So when government is so invasive, so intrusive, then this is like minor pie, yeah, very small pie. Okay, so you get the idea of research design that we are going to use. So empirically, we are going to compare these people who are fully exposed to these people who are not exposed that well to tease out the effects of the program. So MPs directory does not have this feature because MPs, for them, there is a fourth column, and the fourth column tells you the constituency. So it has two additional level of identifiers. For example, I told you that Michael Keane is a very common name. But if I tell you that Michael Keane, the footballer, so if I tell you the profession, you have already narrowed down your search by a lot. If I tell you Michael Keane, the footballer who plays for Manchester United, so then there is only one. So this directory has two additional level of identifiers. You know that a person is MP, and you also know their constituency where they were elected from. So each MP is perfectly identified in the data. So then we use this feature as a specification check for our research design. So if name of a person has no association with their propensity to pay taxes, then in this subsample, we should not see any association, okay? Because this program, the exposure to the program here is independent of how common your name is. Everyone is exposed. Okay, so this Twitter screenshot is just to show that there is very strong first stage in our setting. So the one thing is that the data is available online. The second thing is, are people seeing that data and are they making connection that, okay, so this person has not paid tax, then this person is likely to be tax evader. So this is a Twitter screenshot from a person who is a known television show host, news show host. And he called our Minister of Revenue on his program and challenged him that this is a screenshot of the directory. He showed our minister these screenshots on national TV saying that this is your data for last 4 years and you yourself are not paying taxes and you are the Minister for Revenue. this is the picture of the tax directory for a given year. So this data is being used. And for a politician, so it's really devastating. So if your data is out in the open, so that is going to stay open for some time, for forever. And anytime people can assess it, and they can come back at you, that look, in that year you did not pay your tax. So it is a strong first stage in the sense it will compel people to respond to it in some way. So this is the TPHC program, this offers these benefits. So they are minor, so they are not large benefit, but mostly the important element of this program is honor. That basically they're socially recognizing that you are a top taxpayer. So this is Lahore taxpayer. Kunal has been to Lahore taxpayer, to Lahore airport. So this is counter number 10. So if you have this card, you can go to this counter. And given that there are only 400 people in the country, so there will never be a queue here. Okay, so this is like the traditional economic model to capture tax evasion. So with probability P, your evasion gets detected and you pay a penalty of theta. Okay, so this is the cost of evasion. If you evade $1, you pay a penalty theta in the state that your evasion gets detected, and this state occurs with probability P. With probability 1 minus P, your evasion does not get detected and you keep tau cents out of the dollar. Tau is the tax rate. So whether you evade a marginal dollar or not, you basically trade off these costs and benefits, weighting them with local marginal utility of consumption at that point. Okay. So the only thing which deters people from tax evasion in the conventional model is this penalty theta. So without this penalty, everyone is going to evade everything. So this is quite simple model, but still it does very well in the data, but not perfectly well. So it can explain most of tax evasion, but still if you calibrate this model with reasonable parameters, it does not explain most of tax evasion which is going on. So then the extended model posits that there are like moral costs of evasion, and of moral costs there are two kinds. So one is guilt. So guilt is like the prick of conscience which you feel regardless of whether your evasion is detected or not. And the second thing is shame. Shame you feel if your evasion is get detected and people can see you that you are an evader. So another thing which model ignore is that this probability of detection in the conventional model, this is taken to be the probability with which your return is audited. But people do not know this probability. So they have certain perceptions on this probability. And there is some evidence in literature that people systematically overestimate this probability. This probability is close to 2% in the US. Only 2% of returns get audited by the IRS. But when you go ask people, they claim that this probability is likely 20%. So in the extended model, so there are different, so there are additional parameters. So one is moral costs, and other is the misperception, that you misperceive the probability. So our program potentially change all these things. So this probability of detection in our setting, this goes up because when your taxes are out in the open, people can, this can increase whistleblowing, because of which this P can go up. And this phi is known as the biased beliefs. Your exaggeration of the real expected probability, this may also go down once your taxes are out the open. Because people may feel they will always be fearing that someone will tell the tax administration that I have evaded tax. And then of course there will be moral costs. Okay? So because of all these factors, the tax compliance is going to increase, and people who are affected by this program, they're going to report more income and they're going to pay more tax. And we take these predictions of the model to the data. Empirical strategy, I have already told you that we are going to compare people with unique names with people with common names. obviously you can, so the principle, so concern, principal concern here is that names are not randomly assigned. So names are chosen by parents and with the help of friends or relatives. So name of the person in this sense could be correlated with their ethnicity, with the education of their parents, with the income of their parents. So to address this concern, we always include individual fixed effects in the model because our data are panel data. And to show that our individual fixed effects take care of these things, what we do is we have data from 2006 to 2015. 2006 to 2011, there was no program. So there is no public disclosure of taxes. And we can see if in this data, names, if they are associated with your propensity to pay tax. So in pre-reform data, when we compare people with common names with people with unique names, so there is no clear association along these important characteristics in terms of tax payments. So it means people may have different... So the name of a person may be correlated with certain parental characteristics, but these parental characteristics, they may affect the level, your level of tax payment, but not the changes in tax payments over time. This we can rule out from our pre-reform panel. Okay.
Hold on. So you always have a common name, so the individual fixed effect is, I mean, you have some common names, but you have, you're using the tax identification number for the fixed effects, generating that, yes, because that's what you observe, right?
Yeah. So there are no people in our data who change names, so name is fixed over the whole panel, yeah.
So, and some of the outcome variables in this balance are also fixed, like being made.
Yeah. So we see that these variables, which differ along people with unique names and different names, but they do not predict changes in tax payments over time. So if these characteristics, they are correlated with changes in tax payments over time across these two samples, then it will be a problem for our empirical strategy, because we are going to see any changes in tax payments within individuals after the program.
Sorry, I don't think I understood that. So, because the treatment here is constant over time, right?
Yeah.
Your name is either common, not so common.
Yeah.
So where is the variation? Is it just the pre and post?
So we are looking at changes. So in 2012, people with common names, so they are not affected. So they are our control group. People with unique names, now they are feeling guilt, now they are feeling shame, now they are feeling that someone would identify them in data and will go to tax administration. So their tax payment, if it changes in 2012, it will be because of the effect of the program. And from our pre-reform panels, we are showing that tax payments of these two groups of taxpayers, they were evolving similarly. So there was no difference in pre-reform years. So if we observe any difference in the post-reform years, it could only be because of the effect of the program.
Yeah, can you separate the effect of the guilt and shame from deterrence? Why are you coming?
Yeah, it's very difficult to do that because... So the variation is not there to tease out the mechanisms. So what we do is we can, in our setup, we can rule out the effect through pecuniary channels. We can say that the real probability of detection did not go up after the program. And why we can say that is that Pakistan did not have any official whistleblowing program till 2015. And even when they introduced an official whistleblowing program in 2015, it is remarkably difficult to give information to the tax administration of tax evasion. in 2015 in the official program, can you believe that they are asking that if you come forward to give us some information on tax evasion, you have to sign an affidavit on this. And we are going to prosecute you if that information was proved wrong. So after this, my sense is no one is going to go to the next administration, sign it, because these are confidential. So usually the whistleblowers are your employees or your buyers or sellers. They don't want to be identified. So in any good whistleblowing program, you have to maintain confidentiality of the informant. If you do not do it, they are not going to come forward because their own lives will be in danger. Or they would fear the consequences. Because of this, we make a claim in the paper that the real detection probability did not go up. It would not have increased the incidence of whistleblowing, but it would definitely have increased the perception of the detection probability, and also there will be some guilt and some shame. So we can say that most of what we observe is because of social and psychological factors. But we cannot distinguish within these social and psychological factors the three mechanisms. Okay, so I have only 10 minutes, but given that I have set everything, so now we can rush through the results. So this is our main result. So we are comparing people with common names with unique names. In pre-reform years, there was no effect, so the difference is almost zero. So this is the coefficient. These gray is the 95% confidence interval, and after the program it goes up. So in this year 2013, so this dip we feel is because there was a campaign for tax payment. So in this campaign, what government did was they sent potential taxpayers these messages on their telephone, the advertisements on TV and newspaper, that tax filing is very easy and you should pay your taxes and how important it is to pay your taxes. So our sense is that this campaign would have nudged even the control group taxpayers to pay more in that year. Because of that, this coefficient decreases a little in 2013, otherwise it's quite stable. And we can compare people with different measure of name commonness. So this is if your name appears 10 times or less. This is, we can compare people with above and below median, top and bottom quartile, first and top decile, and so on. So you can convert it into number, and there is like 9% increase, 10% increase in tax payment of people with unique names. So then we can, because we have whole distribution, we can look at this effect throughout the name distribution. Instead of deciding our treatment or control panels on the basis of some cutoff value, we can look at this throughout the distribution. And we interact this name frequency with our after variable. And as we expect, people with common name, these people with unique names, they respond more. So as your name frequency reaches 300, response disappears. So the idea is, so these Muhammad Aslam, so you never have any objective idea on how common your name is. So it's like a subjective feeling. So through your living experience in a society with many Muhammad Aslams, so you get an idea that your name is very common, and you form an expectation that you cannot be identified from your name. And this subjective feeling, it appears is formed when your name is so common that at least 300 people in this data, they share your name. So as I said, if we look at the MP sample only, where name should bear no association with tax payment because exposure to the program is independent of commonness of your name, you do not find anything. So you can divide the sample on the basis of baseline taxable income, and still it remains the same. So So this is response along filing margins. So this is extensive margin, number of people who file tax return. And here also, people with unique names, their tax filing rate increases relative to others. But this effect is smaller. So this is the effect on MPs, and as I said, effect is stronger for them. So for them, it's like 40 log point increase in their tax payments. So you can look for any heterogeneity in response. And what we see is that other than if you are a federal minister, then you are likely to pay more. Other than that, it is not associated, not correlated, any of these characteristics and not correlated with tax payments. So this is extensive margin of MPs. It's where from all this started, because only 33% of them were filing returns. And after the program, filing rate went almost to 100%. And it decreased a little bit later, but it was quite remarkable. And also there is less heterogeneity in this one. Okay, TPHC program. So this is the eligibility cut of the program. And our model predicts that if this program is important, then people close to it, they will try to get into this program. And people who are already there, they will try to hold their cards. They will try to increase their tax payments so to remain in this class. So our model predicts that here the earnings, the reported tax growth rate would go up. And it does, so relative to the other areas. So you see this gap appears. So these are pre-reform years, this is a post-reform year. This is the rank of taxpayer in year T. So this is your increase in tax paid from year T to T plus 1. And this gap appears because of the program. So people close to the eligibility cutoff, they are paying more revenue. They are paying more taxes. And this effect is also strong, 16 to 17% increase in tax payments from people who are close to this program, who are affected by this program. And as I told you, that there are four different types of taxpayers. So these results were when we pool everyone together. So then we can separate them to look at which of these is driving the response. And what we see is there is no effect from self-employed or wage earners or partnerships. Most of the effect is driven by corporations. Corporations are paying more tax. And we have like 2-3 stories on this. So one is that the corporations, they are in the best position to monetize the honor bestowed by this program. So they can go to their customers and say that we are one of the top taxpayers to increase their demand. So they can convert this social recognition into money by increasing demand for their products. So there is also some agency costs here. So there is some agency problem here. That tax burden falls on the shareholder, but all the benefits of the program, they accrue to the director. So here you can have, to the chief executive, CEO. So here you could have CEOs who would look good, who will improve improve their CV by writing, I was CEO of a corporation which was in top 100 tax paying firm at the cost of their shareholders. And similarly, there is other evidence as well that corporations, they are very sensitive to their public reputation, or they are seen by people. For example, in the UK, there were like certain news items that Starbucks or other some top firms, they were not paying any tax. And then there was a large response. So they care about their social, the way they are about their social events. And to tease out these stories, we look at the characteristics of the corporations which respond. And what we find is that the corporations which are in the like consumer sector, where perception of the consumer regarding their social image matters for the demand of their product, most of this is driven by corporations in the consumer sector and not by other corporations. Okay, so I am at the end of time, so the final, our final interest was, do these programs also move social norms towards compliance? And here what we do is we compare the effect of the program along different neighborhoods, in different neighborhoods. And we divide neighborhoods into two types, compliant neighborhoods and non-compliant neighborhoods. Compliant neighborhood we define as a neighborhood in which the proportion of wage earners is above median. So wage earnings, you know, is wage income is third party reported, it cannot be evaded. So if you are surrounded by a lot of wage earners, so probably you live in an area where tax compliance is a social norm. Everyone is paying their tax because they cannot evade it. So when we divide neighborhoods on the basis of these dimensions, what we observe is that most of the response is driven by people in non-compliant neighborhoods who started catching up with more compliant taxpayers. So their compliance increased. So we discover a catch-up pattern, sort of catch-up pattern. So people in low compliant neighborhoods, over time their tax payments went up. So they were like reaching the social norm of the target, their area. Similarly, we look at the effect of public disclosure on electoral success of the MP. So this data is up to 2015. We had an election in 2018 as well. We look at the effect of public disclosure on the re-election probability of MPs in 2018. And again, we see that this is positively associated with their tax payments. So there is a sense that the electorate, they rewarded MPs whose tax payments were on average more than the other MPs. So on the basis of these two pieces of evidence, we claim that there is some suggestive evidence that these programs also moved social norms in the country toward compliance. So we study the effect of pecuniary and non-pecuniary motivations for tax compliance using two Pakistani programs. And we find that public disclosure and social recognition of top taxpayers both increase tax payment by the treated taxpayers, and to some extent they also moved social compact in the country towards compliance. So I stop here and I will wait for your questions.
Thank you very much.
Small point. You mentioned that the earnings are third-party reported for the purpose of the worker. So the increase in the tax payments presumably then comes predominantly from the. Entrepreneurs.
Yeah, I should have mentioned all my results. They are for self-employed.
Ah.
Because for wage earners, so.
There's nothing.
So there is another paper in which I estimate tax evasion in Pakistan of wage income and self-employment income. For wage income, the tax compliance rate is already 99%. So once your compliance is 99%, there is no room to increase it any further. So my sense is they are not affected by this public disclosure program. So we look only at self-employed. So the only place where we use wage earner is where we divide neighborhood on the base into compliant and non-compliant neighborhoods.
How did you know that these people are formal sector workers?
So because they are filing tax return.
Ah, okay.
So we observe only if someone has filed, because this all of this is tax data.
So I mean, that on the results I'm looking at the top 100.
Yeah.
Isn't there a kind of cut? Drop off, then you're with 101st person in the category you are,
yeah,
versus the 99th. And shouldn't there be a more education discontinuity kind of design and worrying about if you're the top one, the first number one there, doesn't really matter very much, right?
It could not be regression discontinuity because people can basically affect their rank. So rank is not immutable. So this running variable is in a way choice. So what we are arguing is, so if you are in this window, so between, so if in year T your rank is between 180 and 120, so then you are trying, if this program matters to you, then you are trying very hard either to be remain eligible, or if you are not eligible, then to get into the program. So what we see is that in this range, the earnings, the growth rate in taxes from year to T to T plus 1 peaks up. So more than any other thing, this bump is showing that this program matters to people. People are trying to get into the program. And more generally, this widening gap between these two curves, this shows that people are paying more because they like the recognition that they are getting.
Sorry, just following up maybe on this, could you give an idea of the economic magnitude of this effect kind of? Because I imagine this is people who are already complying kind of, right? They are already at the 80 percentile and then just add a little bit to get this benefit kind of. Like, is it cost worthy? Like, is there any way of evaluating this?
So in a sense, it's free lunch because it's not costing, this program is not costing to government anything. So other than the factors which Priya pointed out, so there's no monetary cost to the government. So creating a separate counter at the immigration doesn't cost you anything. Giving people free passports, passport like cost 1,000 rupees maybe a year, and you get passport like after 5 years. So monetary costs are very small. So it's only, so in that sense, so these programs are very cost effective if money is the only thing you consider. And because we are in a developing country context where governments are desperate for revenues, so then these programs, they seem very attractive. But of course, so there are privacy concerns, then there are other concerns. So you do not want to live in a society where people are snooping each other, where you are looking how much your neighbor is paying and you're trying to get so social cohesion in a way is affected if you institute this type of program which create incentive for people to like see what other are doing.
I find it interesting in context with the shaming approach to taxation. There's a recent paper on Slovenia where they look at the shaming and they don't find a very persistent effect and not even a very big effect in a developed country where maybe the secrecy and discrimination are different topics, right? Even given that and thinking more policy way, is in a way you are on the conservative side with your estimates, because there still could have happened a general shift that satisfies the common trend assumption, but a general shift of the perception of, in general, how do we do this, right? So I think it's, in that way, it's very powerful what you're saying there in the paper.
Yeah, it's a conservative estimate because, as you rightly say that even the control group, they are affected by this program. And why are they affected? So guilt is internal to you. Guilt is not external. So you feel guilt even if your act of evasion is not exposed. So if your name is very common, so no one is going to know that how much you are paying, and they are not going to figure out that you are an evader. But you yourself know, and you are looking at the data, and maybe you are looking at your friends, your neighbors, your colleagues, and you feel that you are not paying the right amount, so next year you adjust. So to that extent, even the control group is affected by this program, but our program, so our research design does not take that into account. So our estimates are net of that. In a sense, it could be even more. And your question about Slovenia's shaming program, so there are public disclosure programs and then there are naming and shaming programs.
Mm-hmm.
So other than Pakistan, I think in Norway there is a complete public disclosure program, and there was a similar paper by my co-author Joel Slamrod with other people, and they looked at the Norwegian program. It has kind of lower effect, which you expect, because Norwegian compliance rate is high to start with, but there was significant program. I'm not sure about naming and shaming programs. So to large extent, so the response to the program depends upon how the program is structured. If there is a naming and shaming program, but to assess that data, it's very hard to assess that data, then it's not going to create an effect. So in this case, so this directory is available online. Anyone can download it, and they can keep it forever. So this data remains public forever. So it will depend upon how strongly it affects the perceptions of taxpayers about the exposure.
Yeah, just out of interest, do you have any idea on how much people use this or downloaded this directory? Is there any information on how?
Yeah,
because I think like in Finland, you can basically, there is public disclosure, but you have to call the tax administration and ask for this guy what sort of he's crossing. So there aren't anything you can download. You have to have some kind of effort to do that. So the newspaper do it in Finland, but I don't believe that anyone sort of, you know, regular person, you know, calls the tax administration or what my neighbors. Well, maybe some do, but I don't think that's something that people really commonly do. But that's the threshold is lower here. But so, do you have any idea on how much people actually use this, or has there been any discussion in Pakistan about this?
So my sense is this data only tax administration can have, how many times this directory was downloaded.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We could not get this data from them,
okay.
And my sense is they themselves do not have this data.
Okay.
But even if we have this data. So the problem is this can be downloaded once, and then it can be shared across your network through email.
Yeah.
So then in that case, the number of downloads is not the right metric to look at. So the right metric is this information being used? And we do not have like clear-cut, concrete evidence on this. We have only suggestive evidence. So there are other places where I look, where this directory is being quoted, and people are saying that, look, you have paid this much amount.
Okay. So do newspapers make stories?
Plus, there are always, whenever this directory is released, so there are newspaper stories.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
And when we search FBR tax directory within quotes on Google, within quotes mean you are looking for exact these three phrases, FBR tax directory. So we get like, if I remember correctly, more than 10,000 pages.
Yeah.
So there are like 10,000 active web pages which discuss this directory.
Yeah, so people know about it.
Yeah. And newspaper, when they report, they mainly talk about MPs and top 100, top 10 taxpayers, not the common people.
The result of the politicians is very interesting, but of course this is on the back of this newspaper reports and national press, and also the genuine threat that came from British Age and IMF.
Yeah, yeah.
So the politicians obviously also were thinking about the fact that
you
might be cut off or IMF will be cut off.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's quite interesting to see whether that effect is long lasting or not. Right? I mean, this was generally a response to what the press reports and then the threat of sanctions of this kind.
Yeah.
So it's not obvious that, you know, whether in that sense, those group of taxpayers, but they will almost fix, because you could well argue for them this might die out at some point.
Yeah, so we have access to only one post-reform election, and in that election we see that this mattered. So their tax payment mattered. So like this is regression. No. So this is the regression. So this is like the simple raw correlation between re-election probability and your tax payment. But because we have a lot of data, we can throw in a lot of fixed effects. So even if you look at within party and within a given house, and you can control for the percentage of votes obtained in last election and winning margin and other characteristics, so the correlation is pretty strong. So paying one standard deviation higher tax is associated with like 5 percentage point increase in your re-election probability. So in that sense, there was like real response from the electorate. And if electorate remains vigilant, then obviously this will continue. If they drop down their vigil, so then obviously it won't matter. So if people become insensitive, okay, so this is something which is out there, and they stop looking into it and making their decision, political decision on the basis of it, then obviously it will stop.
Thank you very much.
Yes, this highlights the importance of investigative journalism as well, and I guess then the press is quite free in Pakistan if they dare to highlight this kind of.
Yes, so in this period, so the press was free, and they were free, like more free than the UK, because the libel laws are weaker, so they could publish anything and get away with that. So now the things are changing. Now, my sense is press is not, nowadays, not that, they don't have that freedom.
Right, I think we're at the end of the time. Thank you so much for this very fascinating presentation, and thank you all for joining us.
Thanks a lot for your thoughtful